The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Never fucking ends. It never ends. I really, when I heard the news yesterday, I'm like, ugh, I can't. I just, this is, and that's how it ends, with the gunshot at the very end. That's how it ends, with another gunshot yet again. So I wasn't going to play the song again. You know, I started back when that song was released, 1996 or 97, I believe. I think it was one of the shootings. It was, I think, a year after Columbine that Cheryl Wheeler released this song. And when it came out, the record company had a deal that any radio station who played the song, each time we spun it, they would donate so much money to a cause to stop the gun madness. And I worked at one of the stations that did. If you look it up, if you look up the history of the song, If It Were Up to Me by Cheryl Wheeler, you'll see that was a program going on. And now someone in the chat room said, I guess she doesn't get all crazy about the copyright stuff. No, but what happens is I get a content ID notification. So any money that I might make off of advertising on this episode goes to her publishing company. It is what it is. I'd pay to be able to play the song if I could, but they don't have that option available. So I get, at least I know they're not going to boot me off of YouTube if I play it. So I'm playing it because I got to say something. How do I not say anything? So we knew about Buffalo, right? Our friend is Sandy in the room in Environmental Coffee House. Is she in the chat? Because she lives in that area. Yeah. I hope. Well, I know she's okay because I got an email from her today. Buffalo, 10 people killed and 3 wounded when a gunman opened fire with an AR-15 at a Buffalo supermarket on Saturday. The shooter, an 18-year-old moron, a fucking idiot whose brain hasn't fully developed yet. But he did this. Not only did he have an assault rifle, a Bushmaster AR-15 that was legally purchased in New York, but he reportedly used high-capacity magazines that are prohibited in the state. Under New York's 2013 SAFE Act, it is illegal to possess a magazine with a capacity of more than 10 rounds. The typical AR-15 magazine holds 30 rounds, but the one he got held, I don't know, 100? I don't even know. By the way, this killing, they know right away, was racially motivated. It was a hate crime because this 18-year-old moron posted on social media. He posted a manifesto, and it's racist, and he's a pig and a disgusting piece of shit. So that happened. Now, so that was Saturday, right? That was Saturday? Was it Sunday? Yeah, that was Saturday. Then yesterday, we hear about a pair of mass shootings. Well, first we heard about Orange County. Yesterday, Orange County, a man opened fire in a church. Well, actually during a church picnic in Laguna Woods, California, Orange County, that is, killing one person and wounding 5 others. The shooting was stopped after the congregation's pastor struck the gunman with a chair as he paused to reload. Other members of the church, your Irvine Taiwanese Presbyterian Church, then tackled and hogtied the attacker until the police could get there. Now, this is an Asian, a Taiwanese church, and apparently the shooter was a 68-year-old Asian man. So who knows? I don't know. And I thought, okay, great. We had 2 shootings. Then I heard about a third one in Texas. A pair of mass shootings took place in Texas, one in Houston, one in Amarillo. 2 people were killed and 3 injured at a Houston flea market on Sunday during a, quote, fight between 2 groups of people. All 5 of the victims were reportedly involved in the altercation. The Houston Sheriff's Office said the shooting was, quote, not a random act of violence. Great. So these morons took their disagreement to a flea market where they opened fire on each other. Lovely. What was it? 2 killed. Wait, I'm in Texas. Sorry. I'm getting confused. This is Orange County. Oh my goodness. Orange County. I thought there were 2 killed, 3 injured. Oh, 1 killed, 5 injured. You know, they all run together. What can I tell you? So that was Orange County. But then we heard about another one in Texas. Oh, I told you Texas, Amarillo. That was the flea market. The one in Amarillo, 1 person was killed and 4 injured at a shooting in a nightclub at around 4 a.m. on Sunday. Well, if you're in a nightclub at 4 a.m. on Sunday, nothing good is going to happen. You may get laid, but it's not going to be good. You're going to wind up with crabs or worse. Just saying. Just saying. So that was Buffalo, Orange County, California, and Texas. But wait, there's more. Did you hear about the shooting in Milwaukee this weekend? Shooting in Milwaukee's entertainment district wounded 17 people on Friday night. 4 others were injured in a pair of separate shootings that took place at the same location. Wow. The victims ranged in age from 15 to 47, and all are expected to survive. So that's why you didn't hear about this one, because no one's dead. No big deal. People just being shot randomly in Milwaukee, Wisconsin's entertainment district. 17 and then 4 more. That makes 21. 21 people shot in Milwaukee on Friday night. And that's not news enough because nobody was killed. When you are shot and injured with one of these AR-15s, those are designed to do maximum damage. That's why these guns aren't any good for hunting. They're not made for hunting because they're meant to like explode and destroy whatever tissue the bullet tears into. I don't think you can eat meat that's been pulverized in that manner. But wait, there's another one. Yeah, can't leave out North Carolina. They get to vote on Tuesday, don't you know? In Winston-Salem, North Carolina, a series of related shootings last night wounded 7 people. Again, people didn't die, so yeah, well, it's not really news, is it? None of the injuries were life-threatening. Police spokesman said the shootings took place in multiple locations and appeared to be related. From one scene, officers reportedly recovered more than 50 shell casings of various calibers. The spokesman also said the shooting was, quote, not considered to be a random act of violence. What is wrong with us? What is up with this country? We are a sick nation. And so, I don't know. I think we just all need to understand that every time we go out, there's a chance we will be shot dead. Ooh, breaking news. Baby formula factory comes to an agreement with the FDA to resume production and ease shortage. Good. You notice we have no shortage of bullets, no shortage of ammunition. Go figure. Such is our lot in life, I guess. So let me say it, because it's been said by other people, but I'll say it again. If something should happen and I get killed by a gunman's bullet, politicize the fuck out of it. Use me. Put my bullet-ridden body picture everywhere. At that point, I'll have no modesty because I'll be dead. So politicize the fuck out of it. This is just sickening. Just sickening. So I could have been killed last night because we went out Sunday night. We don't often venture out, but we went to a concert last night because there's a band called Five for Fighting. It's a hockey term. It's really one guy. John Ondrasik is Five for Fighting. And I first met John 20 some odd years ago. Actually, my radio station had just gone off the air. It went off the air 25 years ago. And my first job, the day that the station went off the air, I was offered a position at a trade magazine, a radio and record industry trade magazine, as rock editor. And see, the format, rock, rock encompasses like, you know, Motley Crue and Metallica and the kind of shit that I don't really like. My format was known as AAA or adult rock or adult alternative, depending on what publication you work for. They have a different name for it, but AAA, adult album alternative. And so that's where I belonged, but I was doing rock. And so with rock, I'd talk to all the record company people. And for instance, there was a label called EMI that at the time they put out this Five for Fighting record, which I immediately fell in love with. It was called Message for Albert. Great album, and I wanted to write about that. But EMI wanted me to work their Queensryche record. I don't know from Queensryche. But so anyway, I championed this album for a long time. And then EMI Records went under. They went out of business. And John's record, John Ondrasik's record, was just there. But it had some amazing songs. It had one called Last Great American. It had one called Love Song, which was about divorce from a kid's point of view. I mean, it was just really good. And he's got a unique voice and piano feature. All right. So anyway, I would write about this record and we became friends, right? Fast forward a year later, we put another station on the air in LA. But in that time, another AAA station on the air, I worked at this trade magazine for 6 months. And couldn't deal with it because I was basically a promotion record promoter, and that's not what I do. And so went down to San Diego, worked at 91X, and then went back up to LA to help launch this other station. Well, in the meantime, John was a friend of mine, and he was done when EMI folded. He's like, "That's it, I'm done." But he's a musician, and he's a songwriter, and he kept writing, and he produced a demo tape that made its way to this guy Greg Latterman. And Greg ran an independent label called Aware Records. And he had a deal, a distribution deal with Columbia. And sure enough, we put the station on the air in L.A., and I get a call from John, and he said, Greg Latterman loves the record. I'm like, yeah. And I was going to a conference in, I think, Mexico or San Diego, somewhere, and I brought his advance with me and played it for all these radio people. And it's like, this album is coming out sometime in the next year. So long story short, do you remember the song? It came out right around 9/11. Actually, it came out a little before 9/11. But this song was called Superman. And it went, I can't stand to fly. I'm not that naive. Men weren't made to fly with clouds between their knees. And it's a song about, you know, I looked at it as a father, a young father, as a hero to his kids who, you know, singing about Superman. And I'm not really a Superman. I'm just a man with a silly red sheet, you know, searching for kryptonite on this one-way street. Anyway, that song became an anthem for the firefighters and first responders in 9/11. So here was John Ondrasik, Five for Fighting, who nobody knew. The song had just come out, and all of a sudden he's invited to perform at Madison Square Garden at that Concert for Heroes. And he's on the bill with Springsteen and The Who and Sting, and there's John Ondrasik doing Superman. So again, we've been friends for 20 some odd years. Problem is, he's a Republican. See, his wife, Carla, who I adore, actually even went out and took up, got a collection and bought all kinds of donations for me to bring over to Kazakhstan when I adopted Allison to give to the orphanage. I mean, that, but, you know, at the baby shower, this was when we were in the middle of Bush v. Gore, and all of us are just sitting around going, you know, when I left for Kazakhstan, there was no resolution to it. We didn't have a president yet. And the whole time I was over there, my only television, English language television, and I was there for about a month, was Fox, the European Fox. And it was the only thing in English. So that's where I got all my election news, the 2000 Bush v. Gore stuff. But so at that shower, you know, we're all talking about this is insane. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know who's going to be president. And Carla just very quietly said, you know, we're not all Democrats here. So anyway, we didn't talk politics. That's all. I just really didn't talk politics with them. Well, I know this is a long story, but to make a long story even a little longer, when Andrew Breitbart died, remember Breitbart? Breitbart News. And when he died, I thought it was a joke. I thought this guy is such a, you know, this can't be real. And I had a number of run-ins with Andrew Breitbart over the years, and none of them were pleasant. But I fucked up because I was not a friend to my friend. And I guess he posted something when Breitbart died, and I responded in a very cold and callous way. And I said, Andrew Breitbart was never anything but an asshole to me. And you know what? And then John and I didn't speak for the longest time. And I realized I was wrong. His friend died. If I was a friend, I should have said nothing or I'm sorry for your loss. It wasn't about me. It was about his friend died. And I didn't. So years later, I mean, I apologized, but we never regained our close friendship. Well, I hadn't seen him in all these years until last night. And there he is up on stage performing, and he's talking about the song 100 Years. He only got 100 years to live, and it's a song that goes through the stages of life. And he talked about first time he heard a song on the radio, one of his songs on the radio. And he's like, I have an old friend in the audience tonight who actually played my music on the radio first. He got a little mixed up. But, you know, sometimes friendships are more important than the little disagreements we have. So he is now touring, this tour, I don't know, goes through a few more dates in the South. I think he said he's going to Nashville tomorrow, then it ends in June. John is going to come back on the air with me. And the thing is, we're not going to talk politics, but I'll tell you, he does a lot of charity stuff for the troops, for, you know, wounded veterans and stuff. That's his thing. And he put out a song, I can't play it now. We'll play it when he comes on because he'll perform it live for us. But it's a song called Can One Man Change the World? And it's about President Zelensky of Ukraine. And it's really just wonderful. So, again, I am going to play. I'm going to post it. I'll put it on the blog where I post today's show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/5-16-22 because you need to see the video and hear the song because it's really wonderful. And again, some things transcend politics. But then again, you know, he's up there on stage talking about, oh, it's so good to be in Florida. He's never really done a tour in Florida before, which I know because it's been years. And then he said something like, you know, something cryptically supportive of the idiot governor we have here. And all I did was when I saw him backstage, he's like, yeah, the reason I'm still in California is because I don't even remember what he said it was. But I said, well, you don't want to come here. Things are fucking crazy here. And we just skirted around anything sensitive. And I guess that's what you have to do if you want to keep the peace. Anyway, that's the story. I do hope that you will check out that song, though. I'll put it in the chat. And I'll post it on the blog where I put today's song. So, couple of things. Oh, David. Hi.
Hello.
Hi. How'd you like the show last night?
Show was great, but
yes.
First of all, yeah. I'm very disappointed that you didn't play the intro I was asking you to play, but I understand because of the occasion.
Right.
So just so your audience knows, Nicole, because of her restless leg syndrome,
want to see what I got on?
Has purchased these compression things, and I was asking her that she had to play the intro that talks about Nicole being all dressed in leather, because that was the only appropriate intro to play with these.
I'm wearing compression stockings now. My feet are bare. Wait, hold on. Let me pick up. I can show a leg like this. So that's what they look like. They're compression stockings.
And they're fit for a dominatrix.
Oh, yeah.
And so I asked her to play the all dressed in leather intro, yeah. But I understand she had to play Cheryl Wheeler.
Yes, I did.
In regard to the show last night, yes it was very good. The string quartet was brilliant.
String quartet was wonderful.
In particular.
Yes, they were really great.
However, as you know, my experience was impacted.
Oh God!
We had very good seats. We were in row G, I believe, right on the aisle.
It was beautiful.
Great seats in a great venue, and we got there perfect time just for the start of the show.
Yep.
And first, a couple comes in and sits behind us, and they're moderately annoying because they won't shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then another couple comes in and sits in the two seats in front of us.
Yeah.
And Nicole had forgotten her mask.
Yes, I did.
So yeah. I had a good mask in the car that I gave her to wear because she's more at risk.
I had the N95. He had the
And I had a shitty mask.
It wasn't a shitty. It was still a KN95.
It just doesn't fit well.
Right.
It doesn't fit well.
Right.
So at any rate.
We're in Florida where maybe a third, and I'm being generous, maybe a third of the audience was masked.
Oh, I don't even think it was
maybe
much.
A quarter.
I would say maybe 10%.
Okay.
If you leave out the ushers,
right.
I'd say 10%.
Right, if you leave out the ushers. Yeah, you're probably
so
right.
Anyway, so this other couple comes in and sits down in front of us, and all of a sudden, I smell something the likes of which beyond any gas station bathroom I've ever been in.
Yeah.
It was that bad. The guy in front of us had somehow confused his bottle of cologne with a bottle of Raid Roach Killer or something. It was horrendous. And I was literally getting nauseous. So I finally get up and I went to the usher and I said, look, I'm really sorry to complain, but can I please change seats because I'm nauseous?
He looked at me. He's like, I'm going to puke. If I have to stay here, I'm going to puke.
So the usher said, well, fortunately, unfortunately, we have several empty seats, so pick whichever one you want, and by all means, go ahead. So then, just to show that I'm not insane, when I went to the bathroom another time, that same usher was by the table where they were selling the merch, and I said, thank you for letting me change seats, and the guy who was selling merch said, what happened? And when I explained, he said, I know exactly who you're talking about because they were here at the table. I've never had any experience like this in my life. I've been in restaurants. I've been in casinos. I've been in wine bars. I've been in gas station bathrooms. And no scent has ever been as nauseating as this scent was.
Yeah, it was bad. I don't know how the woman was sitting with
him. I feel so sorry for his date. Yeah. I feel so sorry for his date. The string quartet was
amazing. They were awesome. They were really great.
The one girl had won a Tony Award, yep. John said, and they were when we went backstage and got to meet them, they were all very, very nice people.
Yep.
So thank you very much, darling, for arranging that.
You're welcome. Thanks to John Ondrasik. And, you know, look, friendships run deeper than this stuff. You know, that's what we do. Oh, you know what? I wonder if I have this. I put together, you know, when I was still doing a lot of music stuff, I put together a promo. I wonder if I still have it from my music radio days. Let me see. It would be in Daily Files. Let's see if I have it handy and I can play it for you. Music? Nah, of course it wouldn't be there. That would be too easy. Damn. Well, I had a promo that I used to run and I called it Music to My Ears. And it was all these artists doing, you know, like, hi, I'm such and such and I listen to my favorite disc jockey. La, 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 la. And so, and I can't find it. Man, I'm going to have to look for it another time and play it for you because John's on there. Yeah, because, yeah. Anyway, so I'm very happy for him. And this song is really good. Okay, so enough of that. That's what we did last night. Got to go out and see great music. And it's still an important thing to do. Okay, we are going to talk comedy today. Now, let me set it up. Because this is a comedy week. Friday, this coming Friday and Saturday, it's a two-parter, a new documentary will air on HBO. And it's called George Carlin's American Dream. And yes, it's a documentary about George Carlin. And look, there's no question George Carlin is very, very funny, right? Very funny. Nobody needs to, you know, think twice about that. The question is, Republicans, are Republicans funny? So you might remember a few years back, Fox tried this experiment at night. It was the Fox half hour comedy hour or something. Even the name wasn't funny. Talk about trying too hard. It just wasn't funny. So, you know, and then there are comedians, in air quotes, like Dennis Miller. Now, Dennis Miller used to be really, really funny when he was not a right-winger, right? When he was on Saturday Night Live, Dennis Miller used to do Weekend Update. He was great. And then all of a sudden, he turned. He turned Republican, and he stopped being funny. So I was pitched about a month ago or so on this new book. It's called That's Not Funny, How the Right Makes Comedy Work for Them. And I thought, really, these two guys are really going to talk about right-wing comedians? And again, I don't think they're funny. And so, that turns out not to be what the book is about. What the book is about is that they are starting to make inroads. These Republicans are starting to understand how to incorporate, I guess, comedy into what they do. So Fox now has a successful late night comedy show, not the half hour comedy hour that was just so bad, but they have this new late night show hosted by Greg Gutfeld. Now, I wouldn't know Greg Gutfeld if I tripped over him on the street because, frankly, I don't watch Fox. My TV cannot go there. It just doesn't go there. Now, David occasionally watches the Fox for comic relief. He can laugh at that stuff. I get angry. I want to throw and break shit. So, but I knew having our guest on today, we're going to speak with Nick Marks, one of the co-authors of this book in just a moment. I thought I should at least check out what they're doing, because this new nighttime show with this Greg Gutfeld guy is getting ratings, like ratings, like he's up there with, you know, and he's on late at night, like 11 o'clock. And I think he's rivaling The Daily Show. So I thought, all right, let me just check him out and see what he does. So you and I together are going to experience just a couple of minutes of Greg Gutfeld and hope that I don't get copyright violated, because knowing Fox, they will probably do that. But let's just listen for a couple of seconds, shall we? He's already annoying.
Meanwhile, the right once again learned from the left and found their own smear to drive them nuts. What came from the Disney controversy in Florida? One word, groomer.
Oh, God.
Before that, I really? Always thought a groomer was the guy who did my bikini wax. Shout out to Julio.
Okay,
but now
that's
every
funny.
Lefty is a groomer, because it's a
what?
Mirror of what the Dems did with racist or
oh,
do.
Really?
Every rich person, racist. Every white person, racist. Every Trump
well,
rally, racist.
No, the
everything
racists
on Fox, racist.
Are racist.
Every dead president,
but, okay.
every monument, every name
no.
of every school, every
no.
podcaster, every comedian.
See, that's
racist,
my
racist,
problem
racist.
With them is they
so
lie. They work from a false premise.
Is a groomer. Every left-wing Disney employee
wow.
who wants gender studies taught to toddlers is a groomer.
Wow.
Everyone who defends the medicalization of confused kids, you're a groomer.
What?
Everyone who owned their own island and named their private plane the Lolita Express is... Okay, that's a bad example.
Okay, yeah.
But you
wow.
get it.
No.
Groomer is the right answer to
no,
racist.
No, it isn't. That's bullshit.
We call bullshit. We call you a groomer.
What?
But it's gonna get hard for the
yeah, but you
to
are a racist, and I'm not a groomer.
Racist.
Moron, you're a fucking idiot. Oh
free.
My God. Okay. So that gives you a good example of what they did. And see, I can't even get through 3 minutes of it. So, Nick Marks, hi, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for being here. I guess you can get through more of his shtick than I can. I can't.
Yeah, we call the book That's Not Funny, because we're not trying to convince anyone that it's funny. We're trying to convince people that it's comedy and that it's for a particular audience and it needs to be taken seriously as a recruiting mechanism for the Republican base.
Okay, I get that you need to take them seriously because they are. Look, this show, believe it or not, gets ratings.
It does. The average for any of the more familiar late night shows, the Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, and Stephen Colbert, right around 1.5 to 2 million overall viewers per night. Gutfeld is routinely beating all three of those shows in excess of 2 million
no.
viewers per night. Now, he doesn't do as well in the demographic, the younger 18 to 49 year old, because
right.
most Fox News viewers are half dead.
Right.
But his overall viewership is pretty robust, and it's something that many liberal political commentators and comedians, frankly, just aren't really paying much attention to.
Because it's hard. You know what? Look, if it was funny, I'd laugh. There was one thing he said in there that was kind of humorous and I giggled a little bit. But, you know, they start with this false premise. And the thing about humor that I think makes something funny is when you take a segment of reality, something that we can all like attest to. It's like, oh yeah, I experience that all the time. And you find this oddity about it that it's like, oh yeah, that happens. It's those observations, but they're starting from a false premise, which is my problem with Republicans on just about every issue.
It's a great point. It works the same in the conservative comedy world as well. Gutfeld and Jesse Waters and others like him, especially on Fox News, are very good at isolating a small sort of minority representation of some liberal idea and then exploding it out to be representative of the entire sort of liberal base. So I didn't catch the entire clip you just played through, but it sounded like he was calling everybody groomers for
yes,
some reason.
Yes, so what his premise was, if they can call us all racists, well, then they're all groomers. Total non sequitur there. There's no correlation whatsoever. I'm sorry, most of them, look, not all Republicans are racist, but I'd say most racists are Republicans. But groomers, no, That's bullshit. That's just, it's just grasping at straws and reaching for the lowest hanging fruit, I think.
But you see, part of what they are doing, what Gutfeld is doing, is taking that common Fox News talking point that's been cycling through their non-comedy shows for the last 2 weeks. And he just right. kind of says it to say it because he knows that's the thing his audience will respond to. Whether or not it works as a punchline, he's saying it, he's getting people to be engaged.
Right. Now, that half hour comedy hour or whatever the thing that was just bad. It just was not good. And it never got the ratings. Now, is that because it was pre-Trump where they all went nuts and became lemmings? Or is it because maybe this is more entertaining than that was?
The simple answer is it's a bit of both. The half hour news hour was at the tail end of the W. Bush administration in 2007, when liberal comedy satire, The Daily Show, is absolutely at its peak. You might argue that the Fox News audience wasn't yet primed for comedy on that network yet, in the same way that the Trump years have primed that audience to be more receptive to joking, mean-spirited forms of humor like you saw in a Trump. Fox News has also been tinkering with Gutfeld. He had a show called Red Eye for years on the very late night hours, then a Saturday night show. Jesse Waters, they've been has this grooming as a star on that network for a very long time to be a kind of comedian. So in the book, we identify this ecosystem of people like Gutfeld, Joe Rogan being another name many folks might be familiar with, who've been doing comedy from a pretty avowedly right-wing perspective. So it's the bigger environment around Gutfeld has been supporting him too.
Wow. Wow. It's, you know, I know, and he's on The Five, and that show is wildly popular for some reason. They have Judge Jeanine on it, and I don't know how anybody can listen to her. I mean, really? I thought it started out as like young people, and then they brought in the geriatric crowd too.
Yeah, Fox is very good at making stars out of these primetime personalities, right? Whether it's Judge Jeanine or in a previous era, Hannity and O'Reilly and others. They're sprinkled throughout the schedule. They make appearances on one another's shows and tell folks to watch their shows later on. Gutfeld has been doing this for the better part of 2 decades. On Fox News. So Fox viewers were already kind of accustomed to his kind of wry, ironic sensibility. So that now when he launches a fully fledged comedy show, and it is a comedy show, much as I as a liberal might not laugh at it, it's got a monologue, it's got interviews with guests, it's got sketches in it. He's got sort of supporting sketch players that populate his studio. I might not find it funny as a liberal, but it's definitely serving the same function for right-wing folks as The Daily Show and Saturday Night Live serve for me.
Wow. I guess it is. Now, were you watching when they did that half hour news hour thing?
I was in the background. It was not good.
No.
It was a very clumsy ripoff of The Daily Show that didn't keep up with current events in the same way that Gutfeld's nightly show does. But there again, the Fox News audience just didn't have the proper context for comedy yet. They were a purely news, news and opinion-driven right-wing network. It didn't quite have the setting for comedy yet like the Trump years would give them later on.
Okay, well, just because most people have never heard any of it, I thought we'd, you know, there's a lovely piece about you and your co-author, Matt Sienkiewicz.
That's right.
And in Politico today, and embedded in the article was I didn't go out put much effort into finding this, but there was a snippet, half hour news hour snippets. So I thought we'd peruse it a little bit. Let's just check it out and see what kind of comedy stylings we get here. All right. So the half hour. Oh, I think. There we go.
And now, the half hour news hour.
Okay.
With Kurt McNally and
Who?
Jennifer Lange.
Okay. Don't know them. All right.
Welcome to the half hour news hour, the show that delivers an hour's worth of news in 30 minutes or less, or it's free. I'm Kurt McNally.
And I'm Jennifer Lange.
Tonight's top story, dispelling reports that she would staff her White House with longtime cronies and political appointees. Presidential candidate Hillary Clinton vowed that if she becomes president, she will surround herself with a diverse, multi-ethnic, multi-generational group of angry lesbians.
Wow.
There are reports that Fred Thompson's portrayal of a racist character on TV in the 80s could hurt his chances of being elected president today, particularly among voters unable to distinguish between television and real life.
Okay. Hey, I get it now.
Here with our News Hour follow-up, we take you now to our very own Hank Allen in Greensburg, Kansas, for an update on last week's tornado. Can you hear us, Hank?
Loud and clear, Kurt. Hi, Jen.
Oh, there you are.
Hank, what are the conditions on the ground there?
Well, as you can see, last week's tornado has moved on, and now comes the hard part, figuring out how to blame this tragedy on President Bush.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I get it, but I don't. So I guess I get why it didn't do anything. And honestly, I didn't give Greg Gutfeld long enough to see if it's any funnier. Or is it just me? Am I like, that's not funny because it's not funny? Or do I have these implicit biases and says I can't laugh at anything they say because it's just stupid?
There again, it's a bit of both. The Half Hour News Hour failed because the anchors were fictional characters who were often reporting on news events that were a week gone by already. It was just bad. So your reaction to that is not funny is purely justified. Everybody thought it was not funny.
Not funny.
But part of the reason we named the book That's Not Funny, as I mentioned, is that even if we as liberals don't find it funny, we have to acknowledge that it is performing the cohesion mechanism of comedy for right-wing folks. They are rallying behind this in much the same way that we are with The Daily Show. So the tendency that many liberals have had to kind of use a taste-based reaction to it to say, whatever that is, that's not funny, so I'm not going to pay much attention to it. We can't do that anymore. We can't stick our heads in the sand and say this thing isn't rallying people to the right-wing causes in much the same way that so much good left-wing comedy has for us the last two decades.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is when you think back to the heyday of The Daily Show, and Colbert, it was a 1-2 punch. And they, you know, used comedy like a maestro of a world-class symphony because they were informing the young people of America who didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the news, about what was going on by doing it with a sense of humor. The difference was they were really funny. And it's hard. Obviously, I'm not a comedian, but I do like to laugh at comedians' work. And the thing that I find to be the funniest and the most difficult probably to do is to make us laugh about things that are inherently not funny, right? That takes an enormous amount of talent. I mean, to make us laugh during the pandemic, to make us laugh, you know, during the Trump years, because nothing was funny to me during those years, except his being unintentionally funny. Right. There was that unintentional hysterics, but that wasn't the game plan.
Yeah. And again, I don't mean to try to convince anybody that Gutfeld or the Half Hour News Hour is funny. If anything, they've got no real sort of positive agenda to their comedy other than to make fun of the libs. Right. To own the libs. So every punchline, if you watch these shows closely enough, can kind of be reduced to getting liberals mad about their pronoun usage or whatever the case may be. But there's very little actual sort of craft to the setup punchline structure like you might see from a Colbert or some of the personalities you just mentioned.
As opposed to the work they were doing, which was like a fine surgery, I thought. Nick Marks, my husband, David Sloan, is a stand-up comedy aficionado. It's the one thing he likes best after wine, I think. And so, David, you wanted to say something?
Yes, and Nicole understates my affinity for stand-up. I have been a fan going back to when Bill Cosby was acceptable to laugh at when I was a child. Yes. His very first album was one that I owned. At any rate, I have to respectfully beg to differ with you on a point that you made, and it's strictly in regard to Joe Rogan.
Oh. Did we talk about Joe Rogan?
Calling him a right-wing comedian,
I think he's a libertarian, isn't he?
Is inaccurate. If you go back to the pre-podcast Joe Rogan. He was pretty typical sex and drugs type of comedian. So that was the first thing that I wanted to mention. The other thing was a question. How much of the difference between the unfunny show that they had back when Dumbia was president, the difference between that and this clusterfuck that Gutfeld is involved in, how much of the difference is the growth in Fox's audience and the fact that Gutfeld has a much bigger lead-in audience than the previous clusterfuck ever had? Because these people, Fox's audience at 11 or 12, whatever fucking
time. They're asleep,
time,
aren't yeah, they?
I was just going to say, they're either asleep or they're dead. And the ones that are watching are the ones that are the remnants from the garbage dump that was on before Gutfeld's show. That's my not so humble opinion, but I wanted to ask you in regard to the difference between the lead-in from back in 08 or whatever, when it was that those other guys were on.
Yeah, it's a great point. So I think Gutfeld's lead-in right now is Ingram. So he leads out that really huge primetime block that goes Tucker, Ingram, and then maybe him, which is 3-4 million people. So it's a great point. Fox News is still something people are watching live in the flow of their evening thing rather necessarily than on clips, right? Because their viewing audience is older. Regarding the Rogan question, he's a stand-up comedian who's a libertarian. You're right. His politics are not as easily classifiable as conservative or right-wing as other folks. However, we can't take Rogan in isolation. He supported Bernie Sanders in 2020 for a while until flipping to Trump, right?
But you can't. How does that? I just don't get that. I know that's besides the point, but I just don't.
So Joe Rogan doesn't have politics. He's got demographics. Mm. His appeal is strictly targeted to young men. If you listen to any of the ad reads on that show, they're all for off-brand Viagra and boxes of raw meat that you can cook.
Okay.
The point that we make about Rogan in the book is he is connected to other much more nefarious right-wing characters. So while his politics may be all over the map, he's got Milo Yiannopoulos on. He's got far-right libertarian comedians on who hang out with some pretty nasty characters who end up hanging out with some pretty nasty characters who know some Nazis. So it's not that much of a jump to get from Rogan to what we call the basement of the right-wing comedy complex, these pretty nasty, evil trolls who are out there doing real-world violence in the form of, say, the Proud Boys and Gavin McInnes. These folks are all connected in the same media ecosystem, even if Joe Rogan can plausibly go on mic and say, yeah, I'm a liberal because I support drug legalization or whatever.
Right. You know, one of the people that I mentioned earlier is Dennis Miller. Dennis Miller used to be one of us. You know, he was on Saturday Night Live. He was, you know, he'd do drug. I don't know if he was ever a liberal, but he would do sort of left-leaning, you know, drug humor and stuff like that. Then all of a sudden he went right-wing crazy, which is the only way I can describe them. Well, the year that 2012, I go back to 2012, when I had been let go from the progressive talk station here in Miami because Clear Channel had to flip it to be the fourth sports talk station in South Florida and thought we didn't need a progressive talk station with all the right-wing noise in the market. So I lost my job. Well, the Friday before the Democratic convention, well, the week of the election, another one of the right-wing stations called me to have me come in for a week and be the token liberal in the morning. That's fine. I could play that role. So I went in. Well, Dennis Miller, his show aired on that station, and part of his thing with the deal with the station is he'd come and do a week's worth of shows from their studios. Just happened to be that week. Well, Obama wins. And the morning after, I'm in there and I'm flying high and Dennis Miller's pissed. And I went into a thing about how all of this, the whole downfall of society, of the Republican Party, of everything started turning with Ronald Reagan. That he is the man, you can point to him, and that's when it all started going to shit. Now, I couldn't say shit on their air, but that's basically what I said without saying it. And he went ballistic on me went ballistic on me. And then when I said something to one of the hosts about him, he's like, and now she's talking about me in the third person. He went to the general manager and demanded an apology from me to him, or he would not come back in the station. I'm like, I'm not apologizing to you. Wait, get a life, man. These people, they've got, I mean, I was going to say their skin needs to thicken up a bit. He doesn't have skin. It's got like rice paper or something. I couldn't believe how offended he got because I pointed a finger at, I guess, his idol, Ronald Reagan. It was over the top.
It's appropriate you mention Ronald Reagan as the thing that rankled him, because in the book we identify Dennis Miller and Tim Allen as longing for a bygone day when straight white patriarchal men like that were in charge of the country and we didn't have to worry about diversity and inclusion in our comedy clubs anymore. So theirs is a comedy of just kind of older privileged wealth being like, leave me alone. Don't bother me with your sort of diversity and inclusion initiatives. I know what made me laugh back in the 80s. That's what I should still be able to joke about today. So that kind of backward-looking dad humor, that Mike Huckabee, for instance, is somebody who's practitioner of what we call paleo comedy. They're very sort of guarded of their old boys club kind of comedy club traditions in that way.
So, you know, this is an interesting topic that you've taken on. You, again, this is Nick Marks and your partner, Matt Sinkowitz. What made you team up to write a book about right-wing conservative comedy?
It's a great question. We just sort of noticed in a few different spots, figures like Jesse Waters, a few others we write about in the book, like Joe Rogan, who kind of were cohering around a right-wing perspective, but doing so through comedy. The thing that really kicked it into high gear was, as we started researching, we came across all these news articles that ignored it or miscategorized it and said, waiting for the conservative Jon Stewart. Why don't conservatives love to laugh? Tell me if you've seen some of these headlines mm-hmm. before, right? That's conservatives lack a sense of humor, and there's psychological research to back it up.
Yeah.
While that may be true to a certain extent, it's impossible to ignore that this bigger ecosystem of right-wing comedy that's sprung up in the wake of Trump and become something very profitable and interconnected. And we argue that this is something the right is using as a recruiting mechanism to sort of build their appeal long-term as their older constituencies age out of power. They're making this appeal to the young men who are comedy savvy and comedy conversant online. And we as liberals have got to be aware of this and be aware of its power.
Right. So, you know, I get the reason for it now. In case you don't know, when I was first pitched on this book, I basically told your publicist, hell no, they're not funny. I don't want to talk about them. Why would I want to promote them? And she's like, no, that's not what this is about. This is about saying we all dismiss them like that, but their popularity is growing and the authors are trying to warn us not to dismiss them so easily because there's something growing there. It's like a virus. Yeah. It's growing there, like bacteria.
Yeah, that's precisely it. We had that same initial reaction, too, to a lot of the stuff we were noticing was like, oh, that's not funny. That's just Fox News people being angry or Joe Rogan's bro humor. But again, it was the connections. Joe Rogan talks to Greg Gutfeld via Twitter. They go on each other's podcasts and shows. Tim Allen goes on the Gutfeld show to promote Last Man Standing, his sitcom. The important point is that it's economically robust. It's no longer just this kind of marginal thing that only happens online. It's entered the mainstream. More people are watching Gutfeld every night than watching most of the broadcast late night shows. Right. Joe Rogan is the most popular podcaster on planet Earth on most days. And so it's impossible to sort of wave it away with a taste-based judgment of it, even if that's your initial reaction.
Right. And the Joe Rogan thing I don't get either. I mean, wasn't he the guy who did Fear Factor? Wasn't he getting That's people right. to eat bugs and stuff? I don't see the appeal, but I guess I'm not his target audience either.
He, like our former president, was just a TV guy. He was on a reality show. He was on news radio. And he's been a working stand-up for much of his career.
News Radio was a great show, and he wasn't bad on that. He was just a guy. Then again, he was reading somebody else's lines, so, you know.
That's right. He had a successful career on television until he moved to Austin and started getting high with Elon Musk and saying, like, yeah, why is it that it's such a big deal that Roe's going to be repealed, as was his latest episode earlier today.
Oh, my God. That's what he asked today? Why is it a big deal that Roe is being repealed? You know, it makes sense because I've got this, like, 18-year-old kid in San Diego whose mother is one of us, but he listens to the show, and he calls in every now and then. I just can't handle him. And last time he called, he's like, yeah, I don't want to talk about something stupid like Roe v. Wade, like abortion rights, something stupid. Wait till you get someone pregnant and you can't do anything about it, you little jerk. But anyway, I'm sorry. David's back. Yes.
Yeah. Hi. In regard to what you were saying about this growing phenomenon that you've written the book about, and kudos for, you know, pulling the lid off of that trash can and shining some light on the roaches. I'm still, and again, I get emails every week from the local improv comedy club inviting me to take advantage of the free tickets that they're willing to offer me as long as I come in and buy 17 overpriced drinks.
Right.
At any rate, I'm not seeing these conservative comedians doing tours at stadiums or arenas nationwide. I'm not seeing them at improv comedy clubs and things like that. So I think that what's going on here is a circle jerk. Like you were saying, Rogan goes on Gutfeld goes on Rogan. They jerk each other off. They both ejaculate. It's a good time for everybody who's watching the show.
But in terms of
them expanding their influence, let's call it, to people that aren't already, and I hate to use these terms, but it's the only one I can think of, that are already on their side. I think it's minimal. I think they're kind of pointing at each other and going tee hee hee, like elementary school boys making fart jokes, but they aren't, you know, they aren't expanding those fart jokes beyond their immediate circle of friends, and they're certainly not getting the girls to laugh.
Well, their circle of friends is, though, pretty large, and right, as
and
we can
heinous.
See, there is that.
That's the problem.
But they don't look for quality. They don't look at the quality of the audience. They just look at the size, right?
Yeah, I think you're onto something, though, that this mostly circulates in a social media filter bubble that is populated by just conservative folks who are already going to find it funny, in much the same way that The Daily Show's viewership is mostly going to be liberal folks who are already disposed to finding it funny. The one spot where I take issue with that, though, Nicole, you mentioned an 18-year-old nephew or something? That I'm a college professor, so I talk to young folks, especially young men, all the time, and love Rogan. And these are folks whose political ideologies are still somewhat unformed. They just like the fact that he tells it like it is, man. He's in favor of smoking pot and being adventurous with drugs. That is the group that
I am too.
sure.
You know, that's the thing. That's the thing. I'm a 62-year-old woman who tells it like it is. I don't shy away from honesty. And I promise you, if some of those idiots would listen to what I'm saying, they might enjoy the show, but they won't. That's the thing. You think that it's unique to what they're doing. It's no different than what I do. It's just he appeals to that, and I don't.
Yeah, I'm out in Colorado here, so we're all on the same page. But the appeal he has for young men is to serve as a gateway to much more kind of explicit, offensive, extreme versions of the kind of introductory political, cultural liberalism we're talking about here, drug legalization and gay rights. He opens the door to far-right libertarian voices who think that if you're not using the N-word over and over on your podcast, you're not doing comedy right. You're not being edgy enough. So it's, again, those connections that Rogan provides. He's a front door to these much more sort of bad faith kind of right-wing voices.
Right. See, I use the F word, which I find non-offensive, but the N word I find wholly offensive and would never use that word. So that's the difference. I have a conscience. I guess.
Right.
Anyway, Nick Marks, thank you. This is a fascinating topic. As much as, like, I didn't want to go there. And I try. Like I said, he'll watch Fox, especially on election night or when there's a big story, to get the comic relief. I don't find anything about it funny. Like I said, I get angry. I've got a temper. I'm a Scorpio. I get mad. So, yeah, I'm better off not going there, just throwing things at them. Anyway, the book is out. It's called That's Not Funny, How the Right Makes Comedy Work for Them. Even though it's not funny. Look, I thought Donald Trump was the funniest thing out there, but I laughed at him, not with him, and that's the difference.
That's right. Thanks so much for having me, Nicole.
Thank you, Nick. Great to meet you, and I appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. Bye-bye. There you go. Nick Marks. And the book, That's Not Funny. Whoops. I didn't need to play that. Where did that come from? All right. Oh, that was Drift Glass's intro. I was wondering why that was up there. All right. So you could tell it's the end of the show. All right. We're done. Tomorrow, let me tell you what's going on tomorrow. So tomorrow is primary day. It's primary day in Idaho, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Oregon. There are a number of very important races in all of those. But I think the biggest spotlight is on Pennsylvania. Laffy will not be here tomorrow. She's kind of freaked out because they're getting ready for a long, like month-long trip up to Canada. So she's got stuff to do. So she's not going to be here for the next couple of weeks. So she'll be back when she can be back. Tomorrow, though, Will Bunch will join us because he is, you know, he's a national correspondent for the Philadelphia Inquirer. But tomorrow I want to talk to him about Pennsylvania because there's so much at stake there. So that's what we'll do tomorrow and the latest on everything. And I've got, you know, stuff, funny stuff that I can share with you. Not like the Fox, not funny stuff. All right. I'll leave you with the news and I'll see you tomorrow. And thank you as always for hanging with me. All right. See you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler. What's news from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Hundreds of rallies across the country brought out abortion rights supporters on Saturday to protest against the potential Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. Now, I led with that story because I'd rather amplify coverage of Americans standing up for our rights over our bodies than our raging gun epidemic. But unfortunately, we must, because we were inundated with gun violence and deaths this weekend. On Saturday, a gunman dressed in tactical gear drove over 200 miles from his home in southern New York to a predominantly black neighborhood grocery store in the Buffalo area to open fire. He shot 13 people, killing 10. The shooter, an 18-year-old white man, probably the reason he was taken alive instead of shot dead by police, was arrested and charged with a racist hate crime by a white supremacist. The shooter had been investigated previously for threats, and he even left a social media footprint, including a manifesto in which he proved his white supremacist stance and espoused the so-called Great Replacement Theory, being pushed by Tucker Carlson and others who use the media to spread their propaganda. The shooter was charged with first-degree murder. He pled not guilty in court. President Joe Biden is scheduled to travel to Buffalo tomorrow to meet with the families of the victims. But wait, a second mass shooting this weekend, this one on Sunday in Laguna Woods in Orange County, California. This time it was a 68-year-old Asian man reportedly entering the Geneva Presbyterian Church, where he opened fire, killing one person and critically injuring five others. A group of the churchgoers managed to take him down and hogtie his legs with an extension cord until the police got there. And yes, there was another one Sunday afternoon at an open-air flea market in the Houston area. Shots were fired after an altercation that involved at least two guns, left two people dead and three injured. According to Harris County Sheriff Ed Gonzalez, no innocent bystanders were injured. Lovely.
So when Congress adjourned for the weekend, all eyes were on the junior and hopefully soon to be former senator from Kentucky, Rand Paul, who placed a hold on the latest $40 billion relief package for Ukraine. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who led a small contingent of other senators to Kyiv on Saturday, said he expects to advance the package today, saying, quote, "It's important for the United States to help, important for the free world to help." Okay. McConnell added that the Ukraine aid is not charity, but a necessary step to protect U.S. interests by showing that a, quote, "ruthless thug can't march through Europe unchecked." McConnell also said he'd support designating Russia as a state sponsor of terrorism. Speaking of Russia, things aren't looking so good for them about now. The latest British military intelligence assessment of their war says that Russia has lost momentum in their eastern Ukraine offensive and have already lost about a third of the forces it started with in February.
Wow.
Despite Russia's threats, Finland on Sunday said it will seek to join NATO, and Sweden followed suit Monday morning. Sweden's prime minister saying her country must, quote, "adapt to reality and make decisions based on the current climate." Both countries have previously refrained from joining for historic and geopolitical reasons. And separately, European leaders are ratcheting up their economic action against Russia and are preparing a sixth sanctions package that could be done within days. Here at home, it's primary day again on Tuesday. This week, five states go to the booths: Idaho, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Oregon. There's some unexpected action, though, in Pennsylvania, where Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, who's running for the state's Democratic Senate nomination, announced on Sunday that he suffered a stroke on Friday. Fetterman canceled events on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but said he expects to be released from the hospital soon. Of course, the primary is Tuesday. But polls show Fetterman leading his most prominent Democratic rival, Congressman Connor Lamb, by double digits. Fingers crossed, Fetterman is the guy. But he's not the only one to have a stroke this weekend. Seriously, Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland was hospitalized after a minor stroke. The senator said he experienced a bout of lightheadedness and neck pain while giving a speech in Maryland. Meanwhile, the former guy is for some reason speaking up for a walking disaster area. Yes, Donald Trump posted something to somewhere, and one of his people reposted it to Twitter. A statement in which he said, quote, "When Madison was first elected to Congress, he did a great job. Recently, he made some foolish mistakes, which I don't believe he'll make again. Let's give Madison a second chance." Let's not. North Carolina, vote. And finally, we knew it was coming any minute now. We just didn't know when, but it's happened. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the United States has reached 1 million reported deaths from COVID-19. The U.S. has had more deaths per capita than Western Europe or Canada, and it is believed that the U.S., like other countries, has undercounted the true number of deaths from the virus. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.